Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Friday Food Fight. My name is Wes Christian, CEO of Food Handler Solutions, and your host again for this week. And we've got a really amazing topic and an outstanding guest for this week. And I'm going to let Mr. Bart Christian, nationally recognized speaker, go ahead and introduce our guest for us.
You know, it's my great pleasure to introduce my good friend, Ed Rush. And, you know, Ed, I think, had the greatest job in the world getting to talk to my friends just on a regular basis. And I consider you to be one of my very best friends. And now, I've known you for, I don't know what, going on about so ever since Wesley was a pup, I think. That's about the way to put it. About the last 13 or 14 years. And, Ed, I know, you know, just to kind of just dive into your background, I know that you've been an F-18 fighter pilot with the Marines. You're decorated in the service. Thank you so much for your service. You know, we just had Veterans Day not too long ago, and so many people get missed in that. And I just want to tell you thank you on behalf of my family and on our country for all you've done for us. I know that you served tours in Iraq, and you've been I think you were a Top Gun instructor. Am I correct?
I actually graduated from the Navy's Top Gun. I was the instructor in the Marine Corps Weapons School, which is our version, essentially, of Top Gun. So yes. So better than Top Gun. Let me put it that way.
So did you get to meet Tom Cruise? That's my question.
I always tell people I'd love to pretend like I'm the second coming of Iceman, but I made too many mistakes in the airplane to be that guy. But dude, I want to just thank both you guys for the opportunity to be on the Food Fight. Like, I've been like super excited about joining you on this. And I just have to say, so we've known each other since 2008. That's when we first met. And I will just tell you, we reconnected about a year and a half ago. And I'll just tell you, as you're watching this, that Bart is one of the most humble guys. He actually reached out to me and just said, hey, can I help you? I had an event coming up. And he came and actually helped me at my event for 3 days. We actually reconnected there. So this is a guy who walks the walk and talks the talk and really serves. And Wes, it's been great to get to know you and the business and what you guys are building right now for your tribe of food handlers is amazing. So I'm just thrilled to be a part of it. And for those of you watching, there's some amazing stuff coming down the road that's going to blow you away.
Yeah, well, and I appreciate that. And I, you know, and one of the things, you transitioned from the military and you transitioned into the business world. And tell us a little about what you're doing, and I see that you were actually a contestant on The Apprentice with Donald Trump. What was that experience like?
Actually, it was one of my clients. So I had one of my clients who was on season one of The Apprentice. She has some pretty interesting stories, by the way, some behind the scenes stuff about how they pulled some things out of her past and showed that on the show. But yeah, I was in the military. So I was in the military for 11 years. Flew F-18s in and out of Iraq, as you said in your introduction so eloquently. I left the Marine Corps. I loved my job and I loved what I was doing. But I really, as I told my commanding officer when I left the Marine Corps, I said, you know, I didn't want my home life being dominated anymore by an empty chair at the dinner table. I made that decision, incidentally, over the town of Fallujah. Some of your listeners will be familiar with that town. It was a scene of some pretty intense fighting in Iraq back in 2003 and 2004. I was there in 2004, and I was in a left-hand turn over the town of Fallujah in my F-18 at 16,500 feet. I was wearing a set of night vision goggles on my helmet because it was about 2:30 in the morning. I was sipping a Red Bull. My oxygen mask was off. I was sipping a Red Bull because I was trying to stay awake. And it was in that moment that my mind began to wander. And, you know, like when you're in a car and you're driving down the road, like 10 miles goes by, your mind wandering, and it's not that big of a deal. But when you're in an F-18 flying at about 350 miles an hour over a place where people are trained to kill you, your mind wandering is not that good of an idea. And what I realized is my mind was literally wandering around the globe, exactly 12 time zones away, to Arizona, where I lived at the time, and my five-month-old daughter who had just been born. And she's in Arizona. I'm in Iraq. And I said, like, I don't think I'm coming back here anymore. I love the job. I love the mission. I love the Marines. I love everything we're doing. I love flying airplanes. It was such a blast. As you know, we talk about flying airplanes a lot, actually. I loved it, all of it. But like I told my commanding officer, it was time to move on and really spend time with my family. And so I left the Marines. I didn't do what every pilot does. Most of those guys go in and fly for like United or Delta or Southwest or UPS. I went off on my own and became an entrepreneur, which I would only recommend for the boldest of people. But it turned out pretty well for me. Ended up writing a lot of books and helping and inspiring a lot of people to excellence. And here we are.
I had no idea that you lived in Arizona for a short period of time.
Yeah, I was in Yuma. So I lived in Yuma, Arizona. I always tell people, if you want to know where Yuma is, you go until you smell it, and then you make a right and you go until you step in it. And that's Yuma, Arizona. And so I live in San Diego now. And when people, like when your family and friends come to visit you in San Diego, you're not sure if they're coming to visit you or SeaWorld. But when you live in Yuma, Arizona, they're coming to visit you. Like, you right. know, they're there for you, because there's no reason to visit Yuma unless, you know, it's for your family. So, yeah, that was
well,
me.
Well, I have to throw this in there. Some of my very dearest friends and best customers are in the great city of Yuma, Arizona.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, I know I'm joking. I know.
It's a garden spot in the desert. So, you're driving across the desert, all of a sudden there's an oasis, and there's Yuma.
So I know I'm making fun of it. I lived there for 3 years, still own a house there. We still go back there quite a bit. The river is beautiful. But the great thing about humans, that's what they call themselves there. The great thing is, about humans is they, all those jokes I just told, they'll jump right in and join you in telling Yuma jokes.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So oh, yeah. It really is a cool place. By the way, a lot of military, a huge border patrol presence down there in Yuma. So some really great people, some really good Americans. In the bottom, I mean, I saw temperatures 117, 118 degrees. So in the bottom southwest corner of Arizona, so yeah, buddy.
So since we're, you know, kind of talking about business, we'll transition back to that conversation. What actually got you started in business? Because you do a lot of business coaching now, and what really got you into that industry, and ultimately what keeps you going in that industry?
Yeah, I mean, so you know the thing about entrepreneurship and business. And this is true for career people too, is like, if you look back 20 years, you expected this line to be like so straight. But when you look back 20 years, it's like all these zigzags. And my history is just all these zigzags on their way to success. In fact, my wife in the early days, she would say, "Why do you keep changing your mind?" And I said, "I haven't even made up my mind. Like, I don't even figured out what the first step is, you know?" So I started out my first, the first thing I did back in 2006 when I got out of the military was I created an online course for people who wanted to be fighter pilots. I told my wife at the time, I said, "Look, I want to make enough money for this course to be able to buy a computer." That was a $2,500 purchase in 2006. That little tiny business actually grew into this like really cool little six-figure enterprise that didn't really require a lot of work from me. And so I started a second business. My dad was a very well-known basketball referee. In fact, a lot of people, when they hear the name Ed Rush, they're like, "Oh, that's that referee." And then they see me and they're like, "He might be a little younger than the referee guy is." Well, that was my dad. And I told my dad, I said, "Hey, Dad, I just started this online business and I know how to do all this stuff. Why don't we create a course for basketball referees?" We created an online training platform for basketball referees, still exists to this day, still a very successful business. So I actually had some successes early on. Now, the things I didn't tell you about were like the 20 ideas that failed in the middle of those two. But those were the two that really kind of kicked it into gear. And then we met each other when I began to speak. And so what ended up happening was, because I was becoming successful with these businesses, people would ask me to come into events and speak and tell the story about how I started these businesses and how they were successful. And what happened from there is people would eventually meet me in the back of the event room. And they'd say, "Hey, could you come in to my company or to my team or to my group? And could you teach us some of the things that you've learned as well?" And so I would come in and I would talk about success or productivity or even how to use the internet, things like that. And next thing you know, a speaking business was born and a consulting business is born. And the only thing additional to that in the 12 years that happened ever since then was I wrote 5 books. So I basically took my knowledge in those areas and started putting those into books, which became very successful. And now I spend most of my time writing and speaking. It's just what I love to do, and working with business owners and teams and groups and just showing people how to live life to the fullest, how to take advantage of every minute that God's given you on this awesome green earth, and really how to change the world. And truly, right now, there's no better time for you to really get out there as a leader and to really begin to transform people's lives, because people's lives need transforming right now. So it's just an honor and a thrill to be in that industry and just encourage you in whatever, wherever you are in your industry or career, to be able to really kind of push the edge of the envelope, as we say in the fighter pilot world, and to really make the kind of change that you want to make.
Absolutely. And I think it's fair to say that we've all had to, you know, make some big pivots and some big changes in the past 9 months that none of us foresaw going into 2020. And I've actually, speaking of your books and your speeches, I've heard you mention a kind of a philosophy almost of this big pivot that you've talked about. Tell us a little bit about, you know, really a big pivot that you've made in your business in the past 9 months, and maybe just a little bit more about that kind of big pivot philosophy that you have.
It's awesome. Great question. So back in March of 2020, if you remember back then, it feels like 4,000 years ago, by the way. March of 2020 was really when COVID began to hit and the lockdown, the states began to lock down, mask orders and all that sort of thing. It was in March that I started teaching the principle that I ended up calling the big pivot. And the principle was this: every 80 years, the entire world goes through a massive transformation, or as it was described later on by a friend of mine, a massive hyper evolution. If you just look at the world, for example, if we just start in the 1700s, right in 1776, as you know, here in the United States, we have our revolution, Declaration of Independence, that lasts for 5 years, wraps up around 1781. Fast forward 80 years, you're at 1860. In 1860 here in the United States, we are just kicking off the Civil War, which lasts for 5 years, wraps up in 1865. At the same time, Darwin is actually writing The Origin of the Species, which radically transforms the way that we look at science. Fast forward 80 years, 1940. Well, it doesn't take a historian to figure out that's about the time World War II is kicking off. The entire world is resetting. 45, that begins to wrap up. And in each of those eras, those five-year eras, there's massive change in the marketplace. Old industries literally die and completely go away, and new industries are transformed. So, for example, if you are a Southern cotton farmer in 1860, your business in 1865 is drastically, wildly different. If, however, you produce steel, or if you're an industrialist that has some sort of industry, in 1865, you're about to make a lot of money. In 1945, for example, if you're in the industry of building homes, family homes, if you're in the industry of building malls, you're going to have an incredible new lifestyle. If you're in new media, that's the place to be, like, for example, radio or TV in 45. Well, guess what? Fast forward 80 years, we're sitting right in 2020, which is when we're recording this, at the end of 2020. And the world is again in a massive reset. It's almost like all of the industries that needed to go away are hyper accelerating their demise, while at the same time, new industries are coming into play. New technologies are coming into play. And if you're on the front lines, for example, the food industry, you've seen a lot change in the last year. In fact, if you've been in this industry for more than just this year, you've seen more change in 1 year than in the past 40 years combined. Well, guess what? That's uncomfortable. That can be very disequilibrating, by the way, as a leader sometimes. But it's also, in my opinion, the single biggest opportunity that you've ever been presented, okay? Because most leaders I know want to see change happen. You want to be in a position where you can improve and grow. You want to potentially get a promotion, or maybe find yourself into a position where you can have even more leadership. Well, guess what? Now is the time, because all the rules went out the window. I'm telling you, like in March, everything reset and the rules completely went out the window. Let me give an example that has nothing to do with business. This summer, Major League Baseball went back to playing again. This summer, the National League in the Major League, if you know baseball, you know the National League, the pitchers hit, and in the American League, the pitchers don't hit, they have a designated hitter. This year, the National League, the pitchers had a designated hitter. So the pitchers didn't hit. And Major League Baseball said, well, you know, because of COVID. And I'm like, what kind of mental gymnastics do you need to do to connect COVID to a designated hitter? You don't. Here's the deal. Major League Baseball has been trying to put a designated hitter into the National League for years, but you know, all the baseball purists are like, we could never do that. It's too traditional. But once COVID hit, the rules go out the window. Instead of 162 games, now you're playing 80 games. Well, let's jam in the designated hitter. Let's see what happens here. My point is, even where in industries where COVID didn't affect it. And your industry, by the way, was obviously massively affected by this national pandemic. But even in industries where it wasn't as significant, the rules went out the window, which gave you as the leader the opportunity to rapidly transform and to be able to create the kind of change that you want. So now, here's what leaders do. Leaders look at an issue and go, oh my gosh, that's a major problem. This stinks. But a great leader looks at an issue and goes, hey, this is a problem and this is an amazing opportunity. And what I've been teaching since March is the window opened up. So if it normally takes 30 years for you to accelerate your career to a certain point, it could take 3 years now because the rules are out the window. If it normally takes a long time to get your team on board with changing some certain procedures or putting in some safety protocol, well, guess what? If it used to take 2 years, now it could take 2 weeks because things are changing that rapidly. It's giving you as a leader the opportunity to massively innovate and massively transform. And the only thing that can stop you is, frankly, your attitude. Like the people right now who are just whining and moaning and complaining are going to see themselves passed really quickly. By the way, I'm preaching to the choir because, frankly, if you're watching Friday Food Fight, you're the kind of person who's in it to win it. Like you are a motivated, ready to go kind of person. Well, I'm talking to you when I'm telling you the opportunity right now to move quickly and to create innovation and change. There's never, ever been a better time. And as a fighter pilot, I spent my entire career looking for windows that were about a second wide, opportunities for me to win in a dogfight or for me to win in an engagement. Well, guess what? The window just opened up. And it's not going to be open up forever, but now's a great opportunity to jump in, to create the kind of change that you want, to really lead a team in a positive direction, and to really do it with a smile on your face. Because I know the media tells you how horrible things are, but you know what? We live in an amazing world with great people that you can really influence for good.
And I mean, it sounds like as far as, pivot is concerned, one of the big pivots that we need to do is just pivot our mindset and shift our mindset from, looking at the challenge that we're all faced with and shifting that to looking at the opportunity that we're all faced with and really taking and seizing that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing you can do. So I always tell people, like when I was in an F-18 in an emergency situation, I lost an engine. The F-18 has two engines. But losing an engine is a major issue. Shut down a whole bunch of systems. I lost an engine over the Pacific Ocean, 1,000 miles away from Hawaii and 1,000 miles away from Wake Island, which is where I was heading that particular day. I was over some of the most shark-infested waters in the world. And there was a really good chance that I was going to lose the airplane and end up floating around in a raft as human chum. Well, guess what? The first thing they teach you to do when you are in the cockpit of an F-18, the first thing they teach you to do when you hear the noise, which it's in the airplane, it goes like this, doo-doo, doo-doo, that means there's a problem. And I looked at my display and realized that I had a major problem with my engine. The first thing they tell you to do is to push the timer on the clock. We have this little clock that we can just wind up, and it just, it's like an old school, like analog clock, like that. They say, push the timer, which is kind of ridiculous because that doesn't do anything. It doesn't fix the problem. I had an oil pressure issue. The engine was eating itself at the time. Pushing the clock doesn't change the oil pressure. But you know what pushing the clock does? It gives you a moment just to breathe for a moment and to think. Okay, the second thing that I do, that I did in the cockpit that day, so it took a moment, boop, push the clock. It just gives you a moment to breathe because making the next decision in a half a second or 3 seconds is not going to significantly change the outcome. But making the wrong decision in a half second can be disastrous. And I'll tell you that more than one pilot in history has had an engine problem and in their panic shut down the wrong engine. Think about that for a second. My left engine was failing. If I had reached over and shut down the right engine, now I have a failing engine and a shutdown engine, but I can't start the new engine because the failing engine is required to start the new engine. It's a guarantee that I'm going to end up ejecting out of an airplane. So you can make a mistake in seconds that could cost you your life. So the first thing you do is do something else, frankly. Push the button, breathe for a second. The second thing you always do in an emergency situation, I still do it to this very day, if something bad happens, is you smile. When you smile, it not only tells your whole subconscious that everything's going to be fine, but you're also telling the world, hey, I'm good. I'm good. And then what you do is you take the very next step that you need to take to create the kind of change that you want to change so that you can solve the problem and move forward. And so as a leader, step number one is to take a big, deep breath. Okay. A lot of times the biggest mistake that leaders make when there's a extremis situation, this could happen in a kitchen, this could happen in an office, this could happen in a meeting, it could be with a person who's having an issue with their personal life or whatever it is that you're confronted with. The first reaction sometimes is to freak out. And I will tell you that if you begin to freak out, you bring the temperature of the room up instead of bringing it down. My dad, who I mentioned earlier, who was 32 years, was one of the most famous basketball referees, worked finals game after finals game, Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and all those great players. My dad had a rule on the basketball court. When the game went up, he went down. And when the game went down, he went up. So if the game was just a boring 20-point game, he would intensify, because if he did that, he wouldn't make lazy mistakes. But if the game went up, like I watched my dad referee game 7, 1987, Los Angeles Forum, the Lakers against the Celtics. Talk about a game. I watched my dad cool, calm, and collected on that court, because when the game went up, he went down. And as a leader, that's the direction that I always recommend going. So in an intense situation in the cockpit, instead of freaking out, you actually take it back, you breathe for a second, you smile, and then you take the next step to get you to your destination. And for you as a leader, that's exactly what you do. Take a big, deep breath, smile for a moment, and just understand that, and I mean this, no matter what happens, it's good news. Because if it's good, then it's good. If it's really bad, well, guess what? Now is an opportunity for you to take a bad situation and turn it into a good situation. Let me tell you, there's nothing that hallmarks a great leader than by taking something bad and turning it into something good. I mean, look back in history. Who are the people that you read about when you study history? It's not somebody who took a bad situation and made it worse. It's somebody, for example, like Abraham Lincoln, who I mentioned in 1860. He was elected to president in 1860. As soon as he's elected, the country splits into two. And he manages somehow to bring that country back together over a five-year period of time. Or look at Winston Churchill. Everybody hated Winston Churchill. One of the least liked people in England in the 1930s. Derided in both parties. And then all of a sudden, when they went to war, they're like, I think we need Churchill. Churchill comes in and says, everyone says right now, this is going to be our darkest hour. I say instead, this is going to be our finest hour. He gave a speech over the radio that catalyzed a nation that ended up winning World War II decisively by first winning the Battle of Britain, where that speech was first given. So some of the best leaders in history are the ones who came into a situation where there was massive turmoil, massive chaos, massive panic. Their engine was failing over the middle of the Pacific Ocean, but somehow they made it through. And those end up being the best stories too. So if you're in that situation now where like everything's going crazy and you're not even sure what to say about it, well, guess what? Smile, breathe, because you were born for this moment. And when you get out of it, you're going to look back and it's going to be a great story. Okay. So I always tell people, if it's going to be funny later, it's funny now. So if something is totally screwed up right now, but you're going to tell a story about it like 2 months from now, you're going to be laughing about it. Well, guess what? Start laughing now, because it's a good story now. Okay. So that's a place to start.
I love those tips, and they're so appropriate. Go ahead, Bart.
Well, one thing I would add to that, Ed, and I saw you speak not too very long ago, like maybe just this morning, and and you made a great comment that I so locked onto, and I tell audiences this all the time, is that I'm paraphrasing what you said, but that, you know, we have to guard our mind, and so many people find themselves mired in the muck, let's use that word, of the news, that they become, almost have tunnel vision. They can't see beyond themselves because they become tunneled in to what they're watching on TV every single day. And my take on leadership, when we look at great leaders, I think great leaders have one great characteristic that they share in common, is that they surround themselves with people that are going to tell them the truth, but they're also going to support them, and they don't allow themselves to be bombarded with the end of the world. I'm sure that Churchill heard the bad news. I'm sure that Abraham Lincoln heard the bad news. But at the same time, I'm sure that those two men also were surrounded by people that were telling them, yes, this looks dark, but.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that's important. A lot of people don't have that person to throw that but in there.
It's right on. I mean, I have a principle that I call purposeful intake. So purposeful intake, by the way, can fall into a set of categories. That's what you watch. That's what you listen to. That's what you read. That's also who you're with. Okay. So watch, listen, read who you're with. So for example, nobody would knowingly inject themselves with poison. Nobody would knowingly inject themselves with like E. coli and just, you know, just for fun. Nobody would knowingly swim in a cesspool full of cow feces. Nobody would willingly do that. And yet willingly, for some reason, most people spend an hour or more a day listening, watching, or reading the news. Okay. I'm just going to say it. The news is toxic. It's poison. And I'm not even taking a political side here. It's true on the right and the left, and it's all awful. Okay. It's indoctrination that you don't need. Here's the best way to get your news. Ready for this? If something really important happens, somebody's going to tell you about it. Like for real. If something really big happens, I'm talking like 9/11 kind of thing. I'm talking about whoever won the election. Somebody's going to tell you. Everybody's going to tell you. So you don't even need to watch or read it. Why would you spend your time, like for real, watching, reading, listening to the news today in today's day and age is like taking a 12-foot jump off of a high dive into a pool of cow manure, swimming around for about 3 days, and then coming out and wondering why you stink. Okay. So here's my recommendation. Purposeful intake. That's what you watch. That's what you read. That's what you listen to. And that's who you spend your time with. Jim Rohn, the late speaker, said that you are the sum of the five people that you spend the most time with. When I heard that statement, I realized I needed some new friends. All right. That's, by the way, Bart, that's when we got to know each other, because I wanted to hang out with people like you, you know, like people who are really, really trying to make a change in the world. Because you know what? The fact is, and I realized even some of my family members, like, I mean, like, I love my family, you know, but like some extended cousins and uncles and stuff, like, it's nice to see them on Thanksgiving. That's about it. Because why would I want to spend time with toxic people who are constantly bringing you down? So what you watch is important. What I put in front of my eyes, I put there for a reason. What you read is important. I typically read about 2 to 3 books a week, and those books have been chosen by me for a specific purpose. Sometimes it's a book about business. Sometimes it's about a book about communication. Sometimes it's a book about our country or the world. Sometimes, frankly, it's just a fiction book just to get my mind into a creative state. What I listen to is important. The podcast or the audios or even the music is actually quite important. And then, of course, who you spend time with, which is, again, why I'm just like congratulating you for being here on Friday Food Fight. I mean, just the time, we're about 20 minutes into this interview, just the time that you took to invest in yourself is commendatory. Continue to do that, because what ends up happening is, you know, the world that we live in, it feels like a 50-50 world. You know, there's people on one side, there's people on another. That's not even close to being true. It's more like an 80-20 world. 20% of the people in the world are really going at it, and they're going to get about 80% of the result. Okay. Now, the interesting thing about that little 80-20 thing I just said is that actually, it actually multiplies in to that 80-20. So for example, let's say the 20% of the people in the world are really creating 80% of the result. Well, that also means there's a 20% inside the 20%, right? There's 20% of 20%, which is actually 4%. There's 4% of the people in the world who are really, really making things happen. Okay. And if you start running the math, you can see that those 4% create more than half of the result in the world. Okay. Your job is to be in the 4%. Your job is to find people in the 4% who are like, dude, help me be in the 4%. Okay. So, you know, the rule that we say here in the United States, the majority is always right. Nope. Majority is always wrong. Okay. Let me give you a couple examples. Most of the people in the world are out of shape. Most of the people in the world have bad relationships. Most of the people in the world don't take care of themselves mentally. Most of the people in the world have bad attitudes. I'm not interested in being most of the people. I'm interested in being up in the 4%. Okay. So if you want to follow the crowd, watch the news, watch TV at night, watch, you know, I don't know, the latest like reality show or whatever. But if you want to be you, you want to be awesome, purposefully intake. Go get great books, read them. Go listen to great audiobooks if you want to do that. Listen to podcasts that really can make a difference in your life and in your world. Read, listen, watch, and then be around people like West and Bart who can really help you move the needle and change your life. And I know you guys also have a community of people that you pull together. There's other folks in your industry who are really connected as well. Those are the people that you want to be hanging around, not the people who are just happy to live out their lives in some sort of toxic cow manure pool cesspool of an existence. You want to be different, you know? Sorry for the visual, by the way, but it had to be that way.
I love the purposeful intake, and that's a great way to describe that. And I know that you're such an avid reader. I'm just curious, what are a couple of books that have maybe made a great influence on your life, your business? I know you actually suggested and gave me one just recently when we saw each other called The Alter Ego Effect, which I've just started diving into. But what are some other books that you might maybe recommend to folks that have made an impact on yourself?
Yeah, that's good stuff, man. So let me just give you a couple categories of books. So when it comes to books, so there's here's the way that I look at purposeful intake when it comes to books. First thing is, I'm a very spiritual person, much like you guys are. I spend a lot of my time in the ancient scriptures, namely the Bible. I actually spend a lot of time even in the Old Testament reading. There's not a morning that goes. Most of my mornings, I typically start, wake up, go downstairs, get a cup of coffee. I usually do a breathing exercise first thing in the morning, maybe a short little meditation, then right into a little bit of Bible reading. I find that is the single best way to start your day. Include a little prayer in that. And by the way, whatever your spirituality is, whatever you choose I'm not saying you're wrong if you choose, but that's the way I do it, okay? And I find the first step is that's a very powerful way to start your day purposefully, okay? Most people, and when I say most, I mean like probably 90% of the people, start their day with this little device, okay? So if you wake up in the morning and you start your day by turning on your phone, don't, okay? Because whatever's in that email or text message is not helping you create purpose that day. So I always start my day, I have a kid. Like I have a 15-year-old, 13-year-old, 12-year-old, and a 2-year-old, okay? So I do have a 2-year-old that wakes up and sometimes creates less purpose in my morning than I want, but for the most part, that's the way I start. So first category of reading are scriptural reading, which I typically usually start with. Then you've got two other categories, really, which is nonfiction books and fiction, okay? I tend to bias my reading towards books that have stood the test of time. Now, I do read quite a bit of new books, especially in the business world, but I really, really like books that have been around for a while, because the books have been around for a while, you know that they're halfway decent, because they wouldn't have been around for a while if they were awful, right? So, for example, Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich is like a great place to start when it comes to just mindset, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, Napoleon Hill had his issues, Napoleon Hill died broke, but he wrote a really great book by interviewing billionaires, and so you get to learn in the book the way that billionaires think. The book, Wes, that you just mentioned, which is called The Alter Ego Effect, is like my new favorite book by Todd Herman. Again, it's a book about the way that you think about yourself. So those are kind of the nonfiction worlds. I highly recommend my book, 21 Day Miracle. It was Amazon's number one best-selling book. I know that's a shameless plug, but it's like, I always tell people, I'm biased, but that doesn't mean I'm not right. It's a great book, okay? So that's on the nonfiction side. And then on the fiction side, I usually read at least one, but more like two books a month that are in the science fiction or a space fiction category. Now, it's a topic I'm interested in, so I like reading that, but here's what I found with reading science fiction. There is a mind expansion that happens when you read about a fiction book about people who are colonizing a planet. What that does to your brain is it really begins to expand your thinking of what's possible. A lot of times we live in a world that is very negative and limited. You know, I mean, we used to live like in Europe and people are like, this is it. This is all there is in the world. Well, no, you know, like there was more than Europe, you know, there was more than the Fertile Crescent. It was like a whole world. Well, when we expanded to the world, we started to realize, wow, there's a lot more out there. And at some point we discovered like the whole world and the human mind just went, all right, that's it. You know, but there's a lot more out there. So I like reading science fiction for creative purposes. I find that it gives my mind quite a bit of an exercise. So the best way I can define this is like, I'm going to go back to baseball. I love baseball. I was a baseball player all through college, a Division I player. So when I played baseball, like if you stood on the on-deck circle, while the batter was hitting, most batters stand on the on-deck circle with a weight on their bat. So you'll see the hitter, even now in the major leagues, they're swinging a heavy version of the bat. Here's what happens when you swing a heavy version of a bat. Your bat feels lighter. the weird thing is the bat didn't get lighter. Like it's 30 ounces or 50 ounces or whatever it is. It's the same weight. Like when you take the weight off, it didn't change. Like the molecular structure of the bat didn't change. It just feels lighter. What I discovered when I started reading expansive kind of fiction is what I thought might have been impossible started to feel a lot more possible. So, for example, you guys know one of my visions in life is to be able to create a movement, a third party movement in the United States. I think one of the biggest issues we have in our country is the anger and the divisiveness between the parties. And I'd like to be a person that helps create that solution. Well, I started thinking of solutions like that when I began to expand the possibilities in my mind. So three categories when it comes to books. One is just good old scripture, man. I mean, if you haven't like read it for a while, it's worth giving it a shot again. There's some really great stories in there at the very least. And then and it will really help you. I mean, it just totally transforms the way you think. And the second category are nonfiction. Usually those are personal development books that I read there. And then on the other side is just expansive fiction. Those are the three categories that I usually get to when it comes to reading.
Yeah, and you said a shameless plug for your book. We'll definitely put your book in the show notes so that people can get a little bit more information. I think it's a fantastic book, and I do agree with you. Everyone should read it at some point. But the 21-Day Miracle, we'll put some information in the show notes so people can get that easily.
Cool.
You know, one thing that comes to mind when we're talking about leaders and we're talking about movements and we're talking about successes in life, successes don't come without their fair share of failures. And some people will look at a failure as either a failure or maybe we'll refer to it as a setback. What is a failure or a setback that you have been able to turn into a comeback?
All right. So I have. So one of the things that I am proudest of are the number of times I've been wrong. Just this week, I put a video up on Instagram, and in the video, I said, I was talking about our election system in the United States. And you already just heard I'm not partisan, so don't read into this. I was just saying, I said the good news from this election that we are going through or went through in 2020 is that at the end of this, we're going to probably have a better election system. And I said in the video, I said, you know, here in the United States, we invented the plane, the car, and the iPhone. And if we did those things, we should be able to invent a good voting system. Someone replied to me and said, we didn't invent the car. And I was like, wait a second, what? And you know that feeling you get when somebody disagrees with you? You're like, you start to feel like, let's get up. But I went on to the Google machine, and at least according to the Google machine, that's true. Apparently, the car was invented someplace in Europe by one of three different people. And I won't even go into it. And I told the guy, I said, wow, thank you for telling me that. I really like being wrong because when I'm wrong, I get better. And I thought, that's a good philosophy to have. And I realized a lot of my life I've spent with the philosophy that being wrong is more exciting sometimes than being right. Because when you're wrong, you get better. Everything. I'm talking like when I started getting serious about working out. I use kettlebells quite a bit when I work out. When I started getting serious about that, I had a trainer who came to my house for three straight weeks to show me what I was doing wrong so that I could get better and I could do it right, right? I mean, little things like what we're doing right now, communicating right now on video and on podcast. I didn't know how to do this 5-7 years ago, but I got better at it and I got with people who knew what they were doing and they said, no, Ed, when you do this, you got to look at the camera and you got to like, you know, pause every once in a while, stop talking so fast. Like there were ways I was wrong, but if I was like super prideful and like, you don't need to talk, I would have never gotten better. So I love being wrong. Okay. So the first thing is be happy about being wrong because that means you get better. A lot of leaders have real big issues with this, but like, look, if you have issues admitting you're wrong, your team already knows. Like they already know you have that problem. Okay. It's not like it's a surprise to them that Joe doesn't like being wrong, but if you're the kind of person that wants to get better, you're gonna have a team that loves you. So I haven't made one mistake. I've made thousands and thousands and thousands of mistakes. I have started more businesses than I have fingers and toes to count that failed. Okay, so I started this business back in like 2009 called Christian Business Excellence. That failed in like a week or two. I started another one. My first company for real. the real name was Rush Hour Seminars. That didn't work. Okay. But here's my rule. I have a simple rule. It goes like this. It goes fail fast next. Because I have no desire to spend 2 years finding out something's not going to work when I can spend about 2 weeks to find out something that's not going to work. Okay. Now, a lot of times people ask me, how do you know? I know because I get help. I know because I ask people who I trust and they're like, dude, Rush Hour Seminars is not a good name. Okay. So like next thing you know, you move on to the next thing. So I've got, I'm talking about thousands. I've had book covers that looked ridiculous that later on I realized I need to get a new book cover. You know, I had websites that looked like they were built by a kid in his parents' basement because they were built by a kid in his parents' basement. And I eventually made the websites look good. So like all of these improvements happened because I was willing to admit, hey, you know, I'm like, maybe it doesn't look as nice as I think it does. So I just encourage you as a leader, like find a way today to be like, hey, you know, I was wrong about that. People be like, what? Wait, what? And now all of a sudden your team will be more free to be able to grow and learn as well.
You know, and something else is that on that is that I found that if you'll listen to your team, I know so many people that are leaders, you know, they realize they're doing something wrong. They realize it's not working, but they won't listen to people that are not at their level or above, if that makes any sense. I find a lot of times really, really good ideas come out of the blue from people who may not be on the same administrative or supervisory level as you, but yet they've got a lot of experience and they just sometimes I've had kids walk in and give me the best ideas and they don't really know anything about what I'm doing. They just say, well, have you ever thought about doing it this way? I'm like, oh, no, let's give it a shot. Cause I'm with you. I think it's failure is your greatest teacher. That's what I've always looked at. And I just believe that. And I know that that's something that's been true in my life.
Yeah. I mean, and the idea of feedback. So in one of my books, I start a chapter with this sentence and the sentence goes, Hitler was an idiot. That's how I started the chapter. And it's true. Here's the problem with, and I'm going to go back into history, actually back to 1944. In the German Army and Air Force, it was completely frowned upon to deliver bad news. So when we landed in Normandy, Hitler's tank forces in Normandy were at about 10% strength. If you know anything about tanks, that basically means zero. That means not enough gas to even move and barely any ammunition. So there's nothing there. There's nothing there. But by the time the report got up to Hitler in Berlin, the tanks regiments were at 90% strength. That's how it got reported. And so Hitler's sitting in Berlin trying to make decisions with 90% tank regiments when they're actually at 10%. There's nothing you can do to be successful at that point. The reason why that was such an issue is because that leader, in his immaturity as a leader, and I will tell you, Hitler never rose past the rank of corporal in World War I. He was derided by his generals. They called him behind his back the little corporal, a smash at his size, but also his military acumen, because he never took the time to be wrong. He never took the time to get correction. He was awful. And thank God he was awful, because who knows what would happen if he was good at what he did. But because of that, we were able to win decisively because he chose not to hear the truth. Okay. And I made a decision in my business and frankly, in my life that I wanted to know what was true. Okay. Sometimes, you know what? Sometimes, you know, you have mustard on your tie. And like, if you ever got mustard on your tie, you want someone to be like, dude, you have mustard on your tie. You know, have you ever had like a big green thing in your teeth, you know, and someone's like, dude, you got a green thing in your teeth. You're like, thank God someone told me about the green thing. I wouldn't want to walk around all day. Bart, Wes, when I did you today, we did a coaching session to get together. I did a coaching session once. It was three people, and I went into the bathroom. You know, we take these breaks like every hour. I went to the bathroom, came back. About an hour and 15 minutes later, I went back to the bathroom on our break. Well, on that second bathroom trip, I realized my zipper had basically been down for the previous hour and 15 minutes. So I'm standing in front of these people, writing on the board, you know, like teaching them, and my zipper's down and they didn't say anything about it. Okay. I'm like, dude, I have a new rule. If my zipper's down, I don't care how embarrassed I might be, tell me my zipper's down. You know what I'm saying? So like I created a rule in my life that if something's screwed up, like I want to know about it. You know, maybe it hurts to find out that, you know, breath spat or whatever the person's going to say to you. But like, then you'll get some mints and then it won't be so bad, you know? So I have a very simple rule. Like I call it the mustard on my tie rule. If I have mustard on my tie, tell me now, not later, that you had mustard on your tie. It's a quick way to get better. And man, if you can empower your team to communicate that way, I mean, let's just be real honest about this. If you empower your team to communicate great new ideas to you, 90% of the ideas aren't going to be great. But you know what? There's some nuggets in there because on the front lines, people see things that you can't see. They're your eyes and your ears. And every once in a while, man, you'll see something that's a great innovation and you're like, man, I'm glad Ricky brought that to me because if he didn't, we wouldn't have gotten better. So just having your ears open to that sort of thing can be really helpful.
Yeah. Well, we're running a little long and we like to try and keep it around 30, 40 minute format. And we've gone a little over 45 minutes now. So I've got one final question for you before we kind of wrap things up today. And, the majority of our audience is school nutrition professionals across the country, and they've been working very diligently on the front lines, serving food to kids all over this great country for the past several months. If you've gotten a little long-winded here on our call today, but if you had a sign, just a single sign that you could post in each kitchen across the country, what would that sign say?
Wow, that's a good question. So I think I would start with is it Bob Marley who said everything's going to be all right? Isn't that the song?
Everything little birds.
Be all right. What's that?
I said that's two little birds. Every little thing's going to be all
every
right.
Every little thing's going to be all right. I think I would just put that right up on the sign and say, hey, everything's going to be all right. I know times are tough right now, okay? This is what great moments are for. You did not go watch a movie about everything being okay. I'm telling you, any movie you like, Avengers, sports movies, they always have a moment where everything's completely screwed up and it looks like everyone's going to die. And then they win. Okay. So like everything's going to be all right. I'd say that on the sign. And since you said we were long winded, I'm going to give you another one. I would put one up that just says smile and breathe, or breathe and smile, because you know what? That's the first step to dealing with any tragic emergency situation, because everything's going to be all right. So there. Can I put a third one up? Third one would be my book.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would just put a picture of my book. I'm just kidding now. All right, good. That's it.
Bert, what would your sign say?
You know, I think my sign for child nutrition people would be this. You know, it'd be really simple. It'd be, you always knew you were heroes. Now the world knows it. And I think that's a true statement. I mean, that's been my passion and my message I've been trying to get across in almost every show we've done, is that I want child nutrition people to carry this momentum that they built in the community that says, you know, we've always known we're heroes. Now we've shown that we're heroes. And because they've been just as much out there as police or fire and nurses. They've been on the front lines from the very beginning. So my message to them would be, you're heroes. Live it.
No joke.
Believe it. Know it.
Amen.
Love it. Love it. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the show. Ed, thank you for your time. I really appreciate having you here. I've got a ton of additional questions that we did not get to today. So we'll maybe have to have you back on the show at some point, and we can hear a little bit more from you. And Bart, always great to see you as well.
Amen.
Thanks, guys.
Gentlemen, y'all have a wonderful afternoon. For everyone out there watching, this has been another excellent episode of Friday Food Fight. We look forward to seeing you again next week at 12 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Take care and have a great weekend.